Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader with Chris Raposo in Chabay. My guest is joining me from the state of Iowa. Her name is Mariah Tang, and she is the Chief Content Marketing Officer at Staymates. Mariah, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, welcome. I recently watched a webinar hosted by Staymates with Mariah, and it was on the topic niche content in an SEO and why it is a must-have. It was a great webinar. It was based on the Joe Rogan effect, what she called it, and we're going to have a bit of a more of a deep dive today about the topic because I thought it was so insightful and we want to give it a little bit more reach. So let's start with the title, Mariah. The Joe Rogan effect could be polarizing. Some people love him, some people not so much. What was the strategic thinking behind using him as a metaphor for higher ed content strategy webinar?
Yeah. And you nailed it, Chris, as always. I'm in the not a huge fan of Joe Rogan camp myself, but no judgment. Basically, we're living in a time where anybody that has a mic, anybody that has an opinion can spread it around, whether people like it or not. And with his celebrity background and, you know, his connections throughout multiple industries, he's gained this platform and he, you know, could share that opinion far and wide. And institutions like higher education institutions, academic centers have the opportunity or even the responsibility, if you want to go that far, to counter misinformation with that real evidence-based information, facts that give people the chance to really make good decisions for themselves.
You always want to cite your sources. If you're out there listening to somebody or reading a piece on the internet, like you said, everybody's a publisher, everybody's a broadcasting network, if they have a mic and a camera like myself, then, you know, you can go spread the news, whether it's fake news or real news, but it's upon the audience to figure that one out, right? To do a little bit of research and not just believe what they see and what they're being told, but actually do the work.
It's really encouraging. I'm seeing a lot more people saying, what's your source? Give me a link. You know, where did you find that online than we did maybe 5-6 years ago? And you know, whether the driver behind that is a good thing or a bad thing, I think it's a good outcome at least.
Yeah, I'm a stickler for sources. When I provide a stat online in a post and a blog course and a recap and a white paper, it has to be a reputable source and it can't be from a Medium blog. We're talking about niche content, and sometimes when you ask people what's your audience, they often revert back to everyone is my audience, right? And during the webinar, you mentioned this quote, you're not pizza, you can't please everyone. Can you unpack it a little bit for us?
Yeah, I wish I could take credit for that. I read that years ago and have seen it on multiple memes, and I just love that quote too. When you try to be everything to everyone, you end up being not very much to a lot of people. And I think that's true as a parent, as a professional, as a manager. You can't be the best at everything all the time, but you can really be great at the thing you know how to do or that your institution stands for. And that's hard when you have the president wants this or the chancellors want this and the deans are asking for these things. You can dip a toe in a lot of those things, but if you're really going to be known for something, it needs to be something that, like you said, Chris, you can back up with facts, you can back up with expertise, not just opinions. So as search becomes more personalized across Google, across Bing, across AI platforms, it's building this reliance on clickless search. We're going to see fewer broad searches and really a lot more specific questions, specific conversation-based searches. So it's building the answers to those specific questions that can serve a lot of different purposes. So I strongly believe this is why long form content, whether it's video, transcripts, blogs, videos in general, will continue to have a place, because that doesn't mean you need a single piece of content for every single answer to those questions. You can build a knowledge center in one piece across a series of pieces that answer a lot of those questions. And the way search works now, a lot of the time it will just take you right to the answer within that document. Maybe that, you know, makes you miss a little bit of context. It depends on what you're searching for, but the answers are there and you don't have to go digging around to multiple pages to find it. So it really increases the chance that your brand will surface in Google search, in AI search, in whatever the next iteration of that looks like in two months to 5 years from now. And it shows that you're really in touch with your audience, with what they're looking for. You have solutions available to them for every stage. And if for higher ed, that could be answers to really simple questions like, do you have my program, all the way down to very specific, does this specific institution offer me a way to get to the next step and how are they going to do that? So the longer form questions are replacing at a rapid pace those, hey, do you just have this kind of questions like we're used to asking Google?
Yeah. And that really helps also with finding those mission fit students that really fit well into your institutions. So during the episode, during your webinar, you talked about three distinct content roles: the subject matter expert, the active listener, and a combination. You know, marketing teams, especially smaller marketing teams, how should they evaluate which fit best for their brand?
Yeah, I love what you just said about what your audience needs and whether they can find that with you. And the way to really align that from the start is working with your subject matter experts. So think about those champions that you're going to be tapping for information. It might be you, it might be your deans, it might be your faculty, students, donors, whoever it is. Start with them. Are they personable? Are they interested? Are they able to give the time that it takes to get something like this started? Facts really start with those experts. So take their excitement, their enthusiasm, their comfort level as your starting point. Of those three roles, most institutions typically will go for that combination. That way it gives you some flexibility. Not every piece has to be, you know, driven by a single individual. And if they leave at some point, leave your institution, then you don't have to be necessarily worried about, well, who's going to take this byline? It's good to have those great, strong pieces by really talented brand champions, but it's also good to have more flexible content as well. So student testimonials, they have a different vibe than, say, a faculty member coming and delivering, you know, a monologue about something that's really impactful to the audience. At the end of the day, you don't want to box yourself in, but you want to give your audience that reliable core setup that they can come to expect, that they can become fans of. Trying too many things right out of the gate can make your brand feel a little bit disorganized. It can kind of clutter up the space that you're trying to take up. So remember that at the end of the day, humans like structure. We like predictability. The databases also love that. So it's a win-win. And the little changes that deviate away from your plan can be like little delighters that improve their user experience.
Yeah, you touched on an important point there with humans like structure. And one of the key points you had in your webinar was you want to start with one lane and then go wider and go deeper. Can you walk us through that a little bit more, what that looks like in practice when you start?
Yeah. I'll give you an example. So we work with the University of New Mexico Health Sciences Center. They're an academic medical institution in Albuquerque. So a few years ago, they wanted to talk a little bit about a general topic, which was their neurosciences intensive care unit. They were trying to attract some trainees to come there, and it's really a specific niche in neurology, and they wanted to really expand on getting talented individuals to consider them. So we went in with this kind of general idea. Here's this rigorous program. Here's the courses that you'll take. This is how long it takes. But that felt kind of boring. And the subject matter expert was just this really big personality. She was so fun and she had all these stories. So while we were talking, we thought, you know, why don't we do something a little different with this? What would these trainees really want to know about this program? what would they be worrying about? And the SME said right away, work-life balance. Everybody wants to know about that. And it's so hard in these rigorous training programs to find that. And they really take the role of the institution in creating that atmosphere very seriously. So we said, that's it. You know, that's our hook for this story. So we started drilling a little bit deeper on some questions about that and came up with this day in the life concept. So we set it up as, you know, here are the basics about the program. We included all of that core information, but we set it up like a timeline with little images. You know, here's when you're going to have your coffee. Here's when you're going to sneak in a snack break. This is when you'll see patients. This is when you're sitting in your coursework program, part of the track. So it made it like a really digestible, hey, I can do this. It doesn't have to be overwhelming. The institution will be there to make sure that I don't get burned out. And they ended up winning a digital health award for that story. It continues to rank highly in search, we feel, because it touches on both the facts and that emotional pull. No paid social went into that, nothing, but they continue to outrank institutions that generally pull those great candidates because they really tapped into that, you know, emotional brand voice that they can share.
Yeah, there's a lot of great work coming out of Albuquerque and the University of New Mexico. Let's say you have a marketing team that goes on campus to meet with a subject matter expert, and they come in with a plan, right? And they tend to be rigorous, and they said, okay, we have these sets of questions. We want to stick to that. But then you kind of put your emotional intelligence into play, and you feel like, okay, with this rigor, with this one lane, we may not get the most out of our subject matter expert. How do you get out of your own box to get the most out of the interview just so that the subject matter expert thrives?
Yeah, I love that question. I feel like when you're in a role like this, you have to always be curious. You have to know just enough to be dangerous and ask the questions that pull the answers out. So I don't know anything about neurosciences outside of being a person that's read about it every day for 10 years. Like, I don't know the intricacies of the research. I don't, you know, all the terminology, but I know enough to connect the dots and say, hey, is this kind of related to this? And you can see their eyes light up like somebody's asking me about this thing I love to talk about. It's like when people ask me about marathons and I could talk all day long because I'm a runner, you're a runner too. But you tap into that passion point. And for a lot of these academic people, they love teaching. They love sharing their knowledge. They love sharing their expertise. And when you give them the format to say, hey, I'm really curious about this, I am genuinely interested, they open up a lot more and you get some of that, you know, beyond what you'd read on the website information. And that's what people want to know. The people they're going to be spending the next 2 to 4 years with every day, you want to like those people and you want to like what they offer. So getting those questions out, you know, even if it feels silly, like people will know what this means. Give them the opportunity to explain it in their own way. It just goes miles.
Yeah. You never know what angle they have that they can bring to that story. Yeah. But yeah, that's right. People love talking about themselves. People love talking about their passions. Like you said, running. My wife always says, oh my gosh, when somebody talks to me about running, I don't stop. I don't talk much like that, but when it comes to running, I've just opened the floodgates open, and then you build a genuine connection, right? And you build trust with that subject matter expert. And before, it was just this vendor coming in, trying to get a story across, trying to get the job done. But all of a sudden, you're in the link here, something sparks, and then they're open up about things that may have not been in your set of questions.
And the same when it comes to podcasts, you want to have a follow-up ready. And that's when the active listening comes into play. Because if you only stick to your 5 to 10 sets of questions, you may miss those gold nuggets that you have to dig out a little bit with those follow-ups.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I remember one time I was drinking a cup of coffee during a call, which sometimes people will say, you can't do stuff like that. But I feel like it's just conversational. But somebody saw the logo. It was a race logo on my cup. And they said, you've done that race? I've done that race. And he just completely became so much more vulnerable. We got some great content out of that individual, too.
Exactly. I love that. So talking about research, though, earlier, right? When you try to branch into a new field or you're trying to talk to a new segment, it's best to build a persona around that segment. Get the research down, sharpen the axe, you know, for longer before you chop the wood, to get the job done quicker and more effectively. You were suggested during the webinar that you said people should use tools like Gemini or ChatGPT to help with those audience personas, especially for prospective students. But have you noticed during your time consulting with higher ed clients that there are common blind spots that institutions have when creating these personas?
Yeah, 100%. A lot of institutions really like to go heavy with the facts and with the stats. And I think it's for the reasons that we talked about before. You know, they want to appeal to what they think individuals are looking for, what the faculty may wish to talk about or feel super comfortable talking about, I think is a more fair way to state that. They think that people are just doing hard research and not necessarily thinking about how this fits into their life. But the world that people live in now, there are a lot of alternatives to college. It's not like when I grew up, it's like, you're going to college. If you don't, you're going to, you know, your life is going to be tough. Now there's a lot of different pathways to approach education, to extend your education, all of that. So if you're going in just hard with the facts or what people told you 5 to 10 years ago was important, you're going to miss a lot of that. So, you know, people are looking for now, can I afford this? Am I smart enough? They need that validation. Or, you know, who's going to watch my children while I'm at class? Is there some way that I can get there if I don't have a car or if I have to miss work? You know, how will I make up that money for my family? And these are the things that people really think about now when they're thinking about any type of education. So when you ask your current or maybe even alumni students those types of questions, you're going to get answers that are good, that are solid, that are true, but maybe don't reflect what people might be looking at now, might be looking at in the present time. So using AI search tools like ChatGPT, Gemini can really help you collate what a lot of people are searching for in the moment, or at least in the recent history, because it's not always right up to date, what they're searching for, what the results were to those searches, and really build it all together into an emotional story. So you can think about their dreams, their concerns, their hopes that maybe people wouldn't think to ask or respond about if you ask somebody face-to-face. And you can use those results to come up with topics, to build answers to those questions we talked about before, build a lengthy piece, a lengthy video article, several small pieces out of that that answer those questions so they can discover that at any point in their decision-making experience and really think about your brand and how your offerings can help elevate them.
Yeah. Use the tools to help you work smarter, not harder. And, you know, some people there, they're going to be like, AI feels like cheating, or I'm too good for AI, I'm a better writer, whatever. But I feel like, you know, I thought about this for a while, and I thought about, you know, maybe 30 some years ago, it was very common for business leaders like yourself to have a secretary to dictate them to write something or do the research on something, right? And I feel like Gemini or ChatGPT or Perplexity, they're like that secretary you talk to give them a task, you get the task back, you review it, you adjust it, you talk to that AI like you talk to a junior level employee and tell them, hey, this is good, work on this, come back with a new answer, right? And just work it out, because the first response is probably not going to be the best response, but you want to work through it, through that process to get what you need out of it, and then have it fact checked. You know, you want to use other tools. Sometimes I create content, or I create personas, or create research, and I ask the tool to be brutally honest. I say, this is what I have. Where are the gaps that I'm missing, right? Because I don't know what I don't know, but this tool scrapes the internet and will call me out on things if I allow it to do so.
Yeah. And being open to that feedback is everything. I remember when I was a little baby marketer thinking like, I don't need an editor. That means I'm a bad writer or whatever. But when you work with a good editor, you realize that they can elevate your own craft. And that goes the same for design or development or whatever field that you're in marketing. And I completely agree. If you're not shooting those gaps, if you're not figuring out how can I make this better with every piece, you're never going to be a good content creator or be a good strategist, because it's the status quo is toast. Like, it's not a thing anymore. You have to always be doing better.
That's right. Yeah, it takes a lot of humility too. You know, you gotta leave the ego at the door, as I used to say when I worked in the legal industry. But it's a personal thing, a personal battle everybody has to fight with themselves, right? And look at themselves.
Especially creatives. We're so sensitive.
It is not always easy, but through feedback from the right sources, this is where the growth happens. If you accept it, you have to be wise about it too, right? Not everybody's going to give you the right feedback. Some people may want to tear you down because they feel like you're ahead of themselves. Like they're trying to humble you. So you want to evaluate, well, who do I want to listen to? Who do I want to ignore? And then, you know,
surround yourself with little bits of everybody. Yeah.
Exactly. But we're talking about search and we're talking about Google a lot as it comes to search, right? But search isn't, or SEO isn't about Google anymore. And, you know, what's more about AI search. Now, I know me, I go into Perplexity if I look for something, or ChatGPT. You know, how could or how should content teams adapt their niche content strategy to stay visible? Fill an AI overview snippet, the little snippet that everybody gets at top of Google.
Yeah. Schema markup is so important. And I'm not going to talk about that much because it's a little bit outside of my wheelhouse, but you've got schema and then all of the technical database, you know, tagging of your content, categorization of your content on the one hand. On the other hand is kind of, you know, more my area of knowledge is the specificity, the niche content. And that's where really all of this comes into play. It's always been a thing, but now it's just really more prominent and functional. So you keep zeroing in on those specific questions and the answers. You keep asking yourself why, how, what happens next until you get to that final point where you can't ask any more questions. And then that's your niche topic that you can expand upon. So just walking yourself through those little questions, why, how, what happens next. It's a quick little exercise to get a waterfall of topics from the most general down to the most specific, and really a win-win opportunity for you, for your brand, for your audience to connect all of those points of that journey. It improves your chances of rising up to the top of search, whichever platform you're talking about, shows that relevance, shows that authority on all points of that journey. And sometimes you'll find, like Andy Christodina said this in a webinar earlier in 2025, if you're talking about those niche topics, you might be the only one in your space that's delivering that answer. You know, even if you're the first comer to that answer, it's a great way to, one, expand on the knowledge of your subject matter experts, and two, show your audience that you offer those services or products. And then three, if you're the only one talking about it, you're the one that's going to rise up in the search results.
Yeah. And good thing come out of that, right? Being one of those outliers, those for early adopters. It's one of the stories that I always find so interesting, and not to self-promote, but I wrote when I started Penn and Hill, I was really getting a pretty enrollment cliff, writing a lot about the enrollment cliff. And one of the authors of the author of a Has Bail, her name is Suzanne Brinker. She cited one of my blog codes in her book, not even knowing that it was me. She's like, one of her colleagues said, oh, I saw your work, was messaging me. And she's like, I'm not sure what she's talking about. And I had a look into the appendix, right? In the index. And I was like, yeah, it's a blog post that I wrote that was cited in the book. How funny is that? Like,
that is awesome.
And I'm not like the most amazing subject matter expert on it, but I wrote about it in a way that connected with her. So she probably did research online, and that must have popped up on the top of the Google ranking or search or something like that, right? And then she said, okay, I'm going to go with this guy. Because
that is an excellent use case. I mean, that's fantastic.
That's right. It's not me. It was Hannon Hill. Hannon Hill is reputable. I'm the author of the blog post on the Hannon Hill page, right? So it was just a perfect marriage there, and just it worked out that way. But it's kind of funny, like, you don't have to be like that accomplished author or researcher that's been around for 20 years. If you just tap into that niche content, right thing, right place, right time, good things could happen.
Yeah, give that credit where it's due. Make sure you're making all of those connections, and like, so-and-so said this, so-and-so said this, and you're the one connecting those ideas. Absolutely. That's a beautiful use case for what we're talking about.
Exactly. And unbeknowing to her as well. So it wasn't like a favoritism thing, right? It's like, oh, this is a friend of mine, I'm going to put it in. It's like, yeah. Right out of the blue, research showed up on top of the Google search, probably. And that's how
SEO gold.
Yeah. And that's how your company got exposure in a book, this mm-hmm. reputable author. But you highlighted the importance of owned media earlier with the University of New Mexico Health Science, because there was no paid ads there, right? So talk about own media, blogs, newsletters, podcasts as the foundation. In your experience, what are some of the top 2-3 mistakes institutions make when trying to scale their own media efforts?
Yeah. I think trying to be pizza, like trying to start every single topic, trying to start every single subject matter expert off with their own, you know, brand storytelling plan, you're going to frustrate your team. You're going to have delays. You're going to have, you know, timeline issues with trying to get all of this done, especially if you're a small team, which a lot of institutions have a very small team right now, or at least overwhelmed teams. So starting too wide and too deep, I think, is a huge common mistake, very common. You're going to end up putting out just like one-off messages instead of useful, relevant info. Another one we often see at StayMates is institutions will put all their eggs in one basket, putting all of their budget towards email, putting all of their budget towards social without really like doing the research as to, is this where my audience wants to get this information? Is this where they're looking for it? You know, will they be receptive to this? And then I think this is common across all industries, but we see it a lot in higher ed because teams are so tapped and overwhelmed, is stopping after something doesn't work one time. So you might have one campaign that you set up and it kind of bonks and you go, well, that didn't work. I guess this proves my whole, you know, perspective that brand storytelling stinks and there's no use to do it. Or one really sought after dean or faculty member says no to your interview requests. It couldn't possibly be because they're just too busy right now or they had a bad day. It's because this whole process is dumb and we're not doing it. So I think when you get told no or when something doesn't work, that's an opportunity to learn. Sometimes you're right. Sometimes this isn't the right thing for your brand. But that doesn't mean to scrap it all together. It means rethink your what's in it for me statement, rethink your approach, maybe your techniques of how you're going to get those messages out. One thing we always say to teams is that failure is a given. If you're going to fail, make sure you learn from it and move on to make that next attempt better.
Yeah, so you touched on either, you know, you want to look at the data, so you don't want to go start something and just let it ride for months and months and waste the money on it. And also don't go in with the expectations because you don't feel like doing it, just waiting for it to fail and at the first opportunity where you say, Indy, I told you so. Right. So what is the perfect marriage? Like, how long should people stick to a particular campaign strategy before they should pivot?
Yeah, that is a loaded question and a good one. I think for content marketing initiatives like organic blog, organic social, things like that, we always say at least 6 months just because of historically, that's how long it takes Google to index things. I know in the world of AI, it's much faster, but 6 months is a good opportunity to get a mix of SMEs, a mix of topics, a mix of tactics, try some things out. And then at the end of the day, you can look and see what worked, what didn't. And that gives you more of a direction going forward. If you kind of scrap it all after 90 days, you didn't really get enough data to see what's going to work long term. With paid campaigns, you got to watch it a little more closely. Some of the platforms, some of the tools that are being used now to drive a lot of digital ads, digital marketing, require a certain amount of time, 30 days, 60 days, 90, to really learn your campaign, train itself on what's optimal. So it might feel like, oh, we're shoveling out all this money. But if you work with a good group that optimizes daily, that keeps an eye on that budget, make sure it's not overspending what you expected. If you just ride it out, you know, do those daily optimizations at the end of that 30, 60, 90 day window, again, you'll have that data to show, yes, this was effective. Maybe it was effective in a different way than you expected, or no, this didn't work at all and we need to try again. So it's not like we're saying years and years of this, throw all your money, you know, down the hatch and see what happens. It's small chunks of time that can feel like a lot when you have stakeholders asking you questions. So make sure you're using dashboards, make sure you're doing exports of that data, work with a partner who can help you understand it if that's not in your skill set. Really understand day to day, week to week, month to month, what's changing, what's working, what's not.
And this why you want to partner with subject matter experts like StayMates who give you the right answer, the right advice, and not be there to just blow through your budget, but want you to succeed with the money you spend.
Yeah, see that trajectory. So it's like, yes, it feels like panic right now, but trust us, you know, trust us is such a gross phrase, but like we've seen this work for other groups or we've seen this not work. So use that expertise, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So again, I want to move, reach back to the University of New Mexico Health Science one more time, because you said small institution outranks a lot of the bigger ones for their niche content. There's another small institution you touched on during the webinar was Harper College's Lift Pass blog post, which outranked major universities, which was a fascinating case study that you shared. And if anybody wants to read up on it, I'm sure it's on the STEMAS website. What made this story such a SEO success?
Yeah, they were, they kind of blended some approaches here. So it was good timing. They were really in on the ground floor of the Lift Pass program. So Lift partnered with institutions across the U.S., a lot of community colleges and some universities, to help students who live in areas where maybe people don't have great access to public transportation or personal transportation, to get them to class, to get them, you know, discounted rates or free rides to their courses. And so Harper College in Palatine, Illinois, they got in on the ground floor of that program. They started really talking about it and giving it space in their brand storytelling endeavors before they had a lot of data. And so they had a page about it. They'd done a few press releases. Then they got STEMates involved. We partnered with them to write a blog. So as more data was coming through, as stories of individuals who've lived that experience started coming through, we gave that another boost and told some of the stories of those people. It included faculty and their excitement about the program and why. It included a student's voice and her excitement about the program and why. It really appealed to the emotional and the functional side of the story. And so with that narrative kind of approach, it was really a nice platform for authentic photos, for scannable subheadings about why it's great, how it works, how to get involved, and then deeper details that offer, like, if this sounds like something that could work for you or you want to help make this program functional for other students, here's how to do that.
Yeah, funny that you talked about Harper College there during the webinar, because I ran with Jeff Julian. He works at Harper College at NCMPR in New Orleans a couple months ago. And then Patrick Kelly is another guy who works at Harper College. I saw him at Hyatt Webb in Albuquerque last fall. So great, great group of folks there for sure. Good.
Patrick's the guy to follow if you want to know about AI and content. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. As we bring this episode to a close, at the end of the webinar, you humbly said, none of this is new, but most brands still don't take that seriously. What do you think? Why do you think that is?
Yeah, especially, you know, right now, marketing is always historically the first group that goes on the chopping block when anything happens. Even though marketing is really the backbone of a lot of institutions, we can all agree on that, I think. But because KPIs were historically tough to prove with content, with some digital things, it's like chop, 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 and that mindset still stays. But that's not the case anymore. There's so much data. There are so many affordable tools that groups can use to track. And so I think we have to just shift our mindset as an industry. Search platforms are here to stay. They're primarily text-driven still. That will likely change in the next few years. But your website, all of your owned properties, are this big database of content. And that's where search engines of all forms, AI or Google or whatever you choose, are pulling from. It's like the Dewey Decimal System in the library. File number, you know, next subfile, subfile. And so having that content, keeping it up to date, keeping it governed, so crucial for institutions, especially now more than ever. So start with that one SME, set their initiative up for success, give them a really strategic path forward, give them the collateral and tools in a timely way, and keep optimizing that journey to keep them going. Proving marketing success is not the beast that it used to be, especially if you have a good partner or a good in-house team that understands analytics, that understands marketing trends and trajectories. So don't let that historic mindset of marketing is extra overrule the marketing is imperative that we're in right now.
Better get the word out, better spread the news. There's only one way to do that, and that's marketing. Mariah, super episode. Tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about StayMates, and how people can connect with you after this.
Yeah, sure. So I'm the Chief Content Marketing Officer at StayMates. I've been here about 6 years and about 10 to 12 years in the industry in general. So really excited to help institutions figure out their content strategy, kick off those programs, keep them going all the way out through that governance. It's really just exciting to get to be a part of helping to tell those stories. So StayMates is we're a full services professional services agency, everything from website strategy nuts and bolts out through content governance and beyond, digital marketing. So we work with community colleges, adult learning centers, four-year universities and colleges, research centers, hospitals, academic medical centers. We're all over the place. So visit us at staymates.com. Email us at info@staymates.com. Follow us on social. We're all around.
Very good. And in full transparency, by the time this episode airs, I will be part of the StayMates group as AVP of Marketing Strategies. Mariah, super episode. Thank you so much for being part of the Education Marketing Leader. I look forward to working with you more.
Likewise. We're so excited. Thanks, Chris.
Take care.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into the show and sticking with me to the end. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the Education Marketing Leader and share it with your friends and your network. This episode was brought to you by Scribasound Podcast Production. It's one of my ventures. If you ever thought about starting your own podcast, be sure to reach out to me. I would love to help you. Follow the show and tune in every other Thursday as I interview higher ed marketing leaders for your benefit. I see you next time. Have a good day, friends. Take care.